I don't know if it's already called near the end of his month. I'm not sure what, why we have such a small enrollment. Rav Chaim Shalevitz used to say that in Europe there were only two tikkufas. There was something called Zman, and then there was something called Bein HaZman. He says that already was a chisaron, Bein HaZman, but whatever, people needed Bein HaZman. But then as time developed, we began to have multiple tikkufas. There's Zman, there's Bein HaZmanim, there's beginning of Zman, there's towards the end of Zman, you know, so there's all things shrink, because you have weeks in the beginning, weeks at the end, so there's all sorts of transition points that we have. But anyway, I want you to go weiter. If you remember, we mentioned yesterday the Gemara in Brachos that says that Bilam's great talent was that Bilam knew the Zman of Rischa, Eden Rischa, the moment of anger of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he was able to tap into that moment of anger, and the fact that there is such a moment of anger is the meaning of the pasuk that we say every day in Mizmor Shir, Chanukah Tzavayis HaDavid, Ki Rega Bi'apai. Hashem's af, Hashem's anger is Rega, and Rega is Kamemre, the amount of time it takes to say the word Rega is the Zman of Hashem's anger. Now, that was Bilam's great talent. So, Ebazai, the question becomes, so how come it didn't work? In other words, how come Bilam was not able to curse? Was it Stamazai, Hashem stopped him? So, the way the Arizal learns that in order for Bilam not to have the Kayach of Klala, Hashem canceled his moment of anger that day. That day, there was no moment of anger. In other words, if there had been an Idan Rischa, Bilam would have been able to curse, but Hashem was Mesalek, the Zman of Kas, that day. And that's Merumas, it's such an amazing thing, that if you look at the Pasuk in the Parsha, the beginning of the Parsha, right, Bilam was told not to go and not to curse, and then when Bilam goes, the Pasuk says, one second, look at Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Vayichar af Elokim. The anger of God, no, God was angry, ki holechu, because Bilam went. Now, if you translate it super literally, it doesn't say God was angry. It says the anger was angry. See, it could have said Vayichar Elokim. God was angry. But instead it says, Vayichar af Elokim. So look at the Arizal's mamish amazing interpretation. The anger of God was angry, ki holechu, because he went. He does not mean Bilam went. The anger went, meaning the anger lost its job that day. The anger was fired. The anger of God was angry, ki holechu, because it was dismissed. It was not able to function that day, right? That's how the Arizal learns that pshat. But the emes is, Rabbi Gedalia Shor raises this question. What is the tachlis of an Eden Rizka? Now, Bishlama Basar Vadam, let's say I have a bad temper. So I'm working on my anger. I'm angry all the time. So one of the ways I'll work on myself is I'll only allow myself to be angry, you know, 1 hour a day. Like Lashonara, I'll only speak Lashonara 1 hour a day, in order to give me an outlet. What, Hashem needs an outlet? Hashem is angry, but Hashem tries to work on his anger, so he only gets angry, you know, 1 minute, not even 1 minute, one second a day. What is the pshat of Eden Rizcha? So Rabbi Gedalia Shor says, it is the existence of that Eden Rizcha that puts into the world Emas Hadin. Emas Hadin means the fear that a person might have of doing an Aveira. Now that's not the highest madrega. Ideally we serve Hashem not out of fear of punishment. We serve Hashem either out of yiras haramimus, that means awe, or we serve Hashem out of love. The lowest madrega is to serve Hashem out of fear. I better be good because I'm going to get a patch. But that low madrega is very important because if we truly had that madrega, we would never sin. So what puts into the Bria this fear of God is the fact that Hashem allows our neshamas, we don't even know it consciously, but our neshamas feel the anger of Hashem 1 little second a day. That's meiled the chush of Yiras Ha'inish. And therefore the tachlis of the Eden Ritzah is the hisayrus of Yiras Ha'inish. So now you're going to see what a perversely wise person Bilam was. Because if you remember the whole story, Bilam is hired to curse us. And for three times, he's taken to a different place every time, because maybe Balak figures, maybe a different makam, he'll get the inspiration. And for three times, he wants to curse us. And every single time, Hashem turns it into a blessing. So at that point, Balak fires Bilam and says, you know, you have been disgraced. Hashem is not letting you get the covenant. He basically says, get out of here. I assume Bilam didn't get paid, or he had to refund whatever kesef azav he got. But look at Bilam's ingenuity. Bilam then says, I have a plan B. Plan A was to curse them, and that didn't work. Plan B is that I know the God of Israel hates sexual immorality. Let us go to the daughters of Moab, who will entice the Jewish people to fornication and to idolatry. And if you recall, many, many Jews did this, and Hashem brought a magefa, and 24,000 people died, and more would have died if Pinchas didn't come and kill Zimri, head of the tribe of Shimon, and Cozbi, the Midianite woman. Again, it was a combination of the daughters of Moab and the daughters of Midian. So this was Bilam's plan B. But Gedalia Shor says, Bilam's plan B is gufa arising out of the failure of plan A. Because Bilam understood, when there's no Yiras HaOnesh in the world, the Jewish people are especially weak to do Averos, because the natural deterrent, as Bilam is margish, that there's no Mida of Einish today. Or at least there's no Mida that people are feeling. If people are not feeling the Mida Sadin, they're not going to be afraid to do Averos. Now is the time to be Machshuvim. So like a chess master who exploits his competitor's weaknesses, Hashem is exploiting, not Hashem, Bilam is exploiting the fact that there's no Midas Adin today by saying, now is the time to get them to be Nichshel, be Avera, and once you're Nichshel and Avera, the Midas Adin comes back, meaning, yeah, that's because there's no Idin Rizcha, doesn't mean there's no Onish, it means you're not aware of the Onish, you don't feel the Pachad. But if you do have Averus, there's going to be Onshim, particularly in the Dora Midbar, where the Onshim come right away, right? That's the consequence of the Dora Midbar. You're in the presence of Hashem, so punishments come right away. There's a direct cause and effect, yeah.
Didn't the moment of anger come back the following day?
Say again?
Didn't the moment of anger come back the following day? It was taken away from
Yes. So our assumption is that this Avera was on the same day. Yeah, again, it's hard to fit everything in, but we assume it was Mamish that day.
It's a moment of anger. So why did Bilam think that a change of place would help him access that moment of anger? Surely if you've missed the moment, you've missed the moment. You've missed the train, the train's gone.
Yeah, but I guess the idea was that Bilam might have thought that Hashem, you know, he doesn't know that it's gone for the whole day, right? So he thinks maybe it'll be there later. The only question is why a change of makom. Now the truth is, it really wasn't Bilam's idea, it was Balak's idea. Now Balak thought that the concept was that you needed to be in a certain makom for inspiration. Now Bilam probably went along with that because he wanted to get his money, meaning Bilam probably knew that a shinei makom wouldn't work, but if there's any chance he would earn his money, he would try it. Like, in other words, he knew he was being led on a wild goose chase. Balak didn't have that nevuah. Balak didn't necessarily know. Otherwise, Bilam could have said right away, there's no Eden Rizka today, and the like. Okay, now one other thought from the Gra, then I want to go into another major point, and that is, if you read the Psukim, things don't make a lot of sense, because Balak sends a delegation to Bilam to invite him to curse the Jewish people. And what does Balak say? What does Bilam say? Linu po halayla, stay overnight. Vashivaisi eschem davar, and I will give you an answer based on what God speaks to me. Because remember, Hashem only comes to Bilam at night. Hashem doesn't come to Bilam in the day. So he says, let's stay overnight. I'll get some answer from Hashem. So they stay the night, and Hashem comes to Bilam and says to Bilam, who are these people? Again, this is just a conversation beginner. And Bilam says, they sent me to curse B'nai Israel. And Hashem says to Bilam, Lo seilech imahem. Do not even go with them. Lo sa'or esha'am. Do not curse the nation. Ki baruchu, because this is a blessed nation. So Hashem said, don't go with them. And then the next morning, Bilam says, sorry, can't go with you. God has not given me permission. And they go back to Balak. This took a long time. They're going back and forth. They go back a second time with more gold and silver, etc. And Bilam then says, even if you would give me a whole house full of gold and silver, I will not violate Hashem's words, implying that, why don't you try to offer me that? We'll see what happens. Okay. So then what happens is, Bilam again says, stay overnight. Hashem comes to Bilam and he says, now Hashem changes his tune. He says, if they simply want you to come and visit, whatever that means, go with them, but only speak what I tell you to speak. So this is really a reference to what Chazal say, Habal l'tayer misayima. If a person wants to be tar, God helps you. But if you want to be tame, Hashem will lead you on. So initially Hashem said, don't go. But he sees Bilam keeps on coming back, so he says, okay, go, but only do what I tell you to do. So the second time Hashem says, go. So Bilam has no questioner. So the next morning, Bilam goes. He gets up early. He saddles his donkey, reminiscent, the Torah is deliberately using the same words as Avraham Avinu by the Akedah. And what do Chazal say? He got up early, even though it was to slaughter his son, because he had so much enthusiasm, he did it himself. And Bilam has the same enthusiasm as Avraham going to the Akedah, and he goes with Sarai Moav, and then the Pasuk says, and God was angry at him because he went. Now, one second. How could God be angry at him because he went? Now, granted, the first time Hashem said not to go, but Hashem told him, you can go, just only say what I tell you to say. So why is Hashem angry that he went? Right? What's the pshat? It's a contradiction. Hashem just told him, he can go. So the Gra says very beautifully that there's a difference between the word ito. Ito means go with him, and imo also means go with him. They are synonyms. They are translated in English the same way. But the difference between ito and imo is ito is when you go together with somebody but you don't have the same kavana as them. So if you're going for one reason and I'm going for another reason, ito, I'm going with you. But if we go for the same kavanos, that is called imo. Imo is a shutfus in machshava, not only in maisa. Ito is a shutfus only in maisa. So now, the psukim are very, very meduyak. When Hashem gave Bilam permission to go, after the second time, it says, Kum leich itam. Go with them physically, but not in machshava. Meaning they're bringing you the curse. Your machshava should be only to listen to Hashem. Kum leich itam. Now, the pasuk says, however, Vayakam Bilam baboker, Vyachavosh es asono, Vayelech im. Not es, es. Im Sarei Moav. He went with the same desire as the Sarei Moav. The Sarei Moav wanted him to curse, and Bilam was going with that kavana, and that's why the pasuk says Hashem was angry that Bilam was going imam when Hashem told him to go itam. Right? That's how the Gra explains the siba for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. Okay. But be it as it may, Bilam is taken to different places, and every time he tries to curse, Hashem turns it into a blessing, and Balak is getting desperate, and the like. And every time he builds, Balak builds seven altars, and on the seven altars he brings a par va'ayo. He brings a bull, and he brings a ram. So if he did this on seven altars three times, that means he brought a total of 42 korbanos. right? Because each Mizbeach, he brought 14 animals, he did it three times. That is the 42 Karbanas. Second. So all of Bilam's Nevuas, Chazal have a Messiah, that his Nevuas are about the Mashiach, about the Geula, about the fact that although there are enemies that want to destroy Bnei Yisrael, eventually those enemies will be defeated and destroyed, and there'll be an ultimate redemption of Am Yisrael, meaning that this is one of the Ramazim in the Torah to the idea of Geula. So today, it's actually very Beshert. Today is the yahrzeit of the Orach Chaim. I don't know if anyone mentioned it. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh, Rav Chaim Ben Attar, was a great, great gadol from Morocco who came to Eretz Yisrael, actually in the time of the Vilna Gaon. And he wrote a Perush on the Torah. He's one of the few Meforshim that we call Orach Chaim HaKadosh, the Orach Chaim, the Holy One. We don't use that appellation that often. And he is buried on Har HaZeisim. And I imagine, although I wasn't there today, but I know from past years, that thousands and thousands of people come to the kever of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. And he offers the following explanation, at least of one of these nevuas. If you look, I'm trying to find the pasuk here. In his last nevuah, he says the following. This is in Perek Chavdalit, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Erenu Volayata. I see him, but not the way he is now. Ashurenu, I gaze at them, v'lo karov, meaning he's saying, I see the Jewish people at the end of days. Darach kochav mi Yaakov, a star is stepping out from Yaakov, the nation of Yaakov. V'kam shevet mi Israel, and a staff is arising from Israel. Umachatz pase Moab, it will smite the corners of Moab. V'karkar kol b'nei Shes, it will destroy all the children of Shes. Again, these are hostile nations. V'haya edaim Yeresha, in the land of Esav, shall be an inheritance for the Jewish people. V'haya Yeresha Seir Oyevav, and the land of Seir, that is Esav's father-in-law, will be an inheritance. The Yisrael Oisechoyel, and Yisrael will engage in valor and heroism. So this is referring to the Mashiach, and remember I think I had mentioned that although even in the Midbar we were not allowed to conquer the territory of Moab and Edom, we weren't even allowed to pass through their land, the Asid Lavo, we will get not only the land of the seven nations, which is Canaan, but we will get Edom, Ammon, Moab, that's the east bank of the Jordan, and south, etc. Actually, Edom includes Saudi Arabia, so I don't know if we need it, but when Mashiach comes, we'll get all the oil.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if we'll need so much oil when Mashiach comes, but that is the land of Edom, the land of Esav. Now, the Orach Chaim says the following. What is the repetition here? What is the double alliteration? Arenu v'lo ata, I see him, and not now. Ashurenu v'lo karav, I gaze at it and it's not nearby. Mashiach is in the long future. A kochav comes from Yaakov. A staff comes from Israel. Why is everything stated twice? By the way, this phrase, Dorach Kochav Miyakov, a star comes up from Yaakov. This is why, after the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, when Rome destroyed the temple, so around 50 years later, there was a man who organized the Jewish people to be a big army to defeat the Romans. This person's name was Shimon ben Kuziva. Rabbi Akiva actually thought he was Mashiach because he was a great, great warrior. And Rabbi Akiva gave him the name Bar Kochva, the son of a star. His name was Shimon ben Kuziva, but he was called Bar Kochba because Rabbi Akiva applied the pasuk to him, Zarach Kochav, you are the star that has come forward from Yaakov in order to conquer our enemies. And the emissaries, Rabbi Akiva, believed Bar Kochba was Mashiach. And Bar Kochba was initially very, very successful. Bar Kochba reclaimed from the Romans 900 villages. I didn't know there were, I wouldn't have thought there were 900 villages. But he reclaimed 900 villages and cities. And there's even archaeological evidence that under the guidance of Rabbi Akiva, they began to build a third Beis HaMikdash. Because Rabbi Akiva thought Bar Kochba was the Mashiach. But then what happened was, the Emperor Hadrian, that's called Adrianus, don't confuse him with Vespasian. Vespasian and his son Titos were the people who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. That's Vespasian. But that's called Aspasianus. Aspasianus is Vespasian. Hadrianus is Hadrian. And Hadrian is around, the second Mikdash was destroyed in the year 70. And the Bar Kochba revolt was from 130 to 135. So it's around 60 years later. Eventually, the Bar Kochba revolt was mercilessly crushed in Beitar, also on the 9th of Av. And according to Chazal, the casualties in Beitar were much greater than even the casualties of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the aftermath of Beitar was much worse, because when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that, of course, was a great, great tragedy. But Jews were allowed to learn Torah. They were allowed to do mitzvahs. After Beitar, when you hear about the Romans killing people because they were learning Torah, that is not after the Churban. That is after Beitar. As Hadrian decided, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And he crushed the Bar Kochba revolts very mercilessly. And in fact, Jews were not allowed to live in Jerusalem for 200 years. He turned the city of Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, into a Roman idolatrous temple called Ilia Capitolina. And for 200 years, no Jews were even allowed to live in the city. The only permission he gave was every 9th of Av, Jews were allowed to circle the old city wall, the city walls, which indeed to this very day, some Yidden have a minug on Tisha B'Av to walk around the city walls. And mourn. If you've been to the old city, I'm sure you have, but you may see there's an area called the Cardo. The Cardo is below street level. Now it's fancy. They have it's like a mall. They have shops and stores. Shouldn't go there. But what that is a remnant of the main street of the Roman occupation of the city when Jews weren't allowed to be there. Right. So maybe it's befitting that. No, Jews shouldn't go there. But it is, that's Ilia Capitolina. The street level was much, much lower then. That was a fancy street, even then. So that was Bar Kochba. But the Or HaChaim, going back to the repetition here, the Or HaChaim says the following. There are two ways Mashiach can come. All of us believe it is an ikar of our Emunah, that there's going to be redemption and there's going to be Geula. But if Klal Yisrael is on a high Madrega, Geula will come in a miraculous, supernatural way. And that is called like a shooting star, like a comet, like an explosion. Geula will come in miracles with nisim and niflos. But if we're not Socha, we'll still have a Geula. There'll be a Geula. Mashiach will come no matter what. But it's going to come in a slow, gradual, painful process. Slowly and slowly until the final Mashiach comes. Meaning, instead of Mashiach just coming and giving us Eretz Yisrael, there'll be wars, people will die, there'll be political victories, political defeats, and you're not going to see the hand of Hashem so apparently, But slowly, 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 he's moving us towards redemption till the Mashiach finally comes. So the Geula process can be totally miraculous and supernatural, or it can be slow and gradual and painful, depending on our merit. And therefore he says, Dorach Kochav, the coming of the star is the supernatural Mashiach that comes in the merit of the righteousness of Am Yisrael. But if we're not zoche to the Kochav, come Shaveth. It'll be like an old man hobbling on a cane. Mashiach will come, but it'll be slow, and it's not going to look like Mashiach necessarily until he finally reveals himself. And whether it'll be one or the other depends on the following. We know that the Jewish people are called Yaakov sometimes, and the Jewish people are called Yisrael. Right? Yaakov himself had two names. Now the word Yaakov means heel, the heel. And that connotes the Jewish people who are on a lower level, the regular Jews. Yisrael, you have been victorious with the angels of God. That's the name that Yaakov got when he struggled with the angel. So the Orach Chaim says, Yaakov refers to the average Jew, and Yisrael refers to the specially righteous Jew. So now, but here, this is going to work almost a little the opposite of what you would think. If Mashiach comes in the merit of Yaakov, by that I mean that even the merits of the ordinary Jew are righteous and holy. So the other way, so Yaakov doesn't mean they're lowly, but it means even the lowest Jews are righteous and good, Mashiach will come like a star, supernatural. But if the right, if the average Jews are not righteous, and Mashiach comes only in the merit of the greatest tzaddikim, then it'll come b'derech hateva, and it'll be painful and the like. This is what the Orach Chaim says. Now, this is a truly, truly remarkable Orach Chaim, because it has interesting implications. Maybe I should tell you to shut off the recorder here. But I'm just telling you a possibility. And that is, you know, there's a whole controversy in many places, not in the yeshiva world, although, interesting question. There is this prayer, maybe in your own shuls, you recite it, a tefillah l'shlom ha-medina, right? There's a prayer for the state of Israel. Now, some people say it, some people don't say it. But even among those who say it, there was one phrase in the prayer that's very controversial. And some people will say the prayer, but they're not going to say that phrase. This is a loaded phrase. In fact, I'm warning you, when you apply, if any of you ever apply for a job as a synagogue rabbi, you have to be prepared to answer this question. Do you celebrate Yom HaTzimut? You know, whatever. They're going to ask you all sorts of questions. And you're not always going to know what to answer. Do they want me to say yes or no? I'll go either way. I just want to know what you want me to say. So you're going to have to figure that out. But anyway, but the controversial phrase in the prayer is Reshit Tzimichas Gulasein. It is the beginning of the flowering of our redemption. That's in Hebrew, and the phrase that is sometimes used is the Aramaic phrase of Aschalta de Geula. It's the beginning of the redemption. Meaning, the redemption will culminate with Mashiach. But there'll be steps on the way that Hashem is bringing us closer to Mashiach by bringing the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael, by allowing us to have a state, etc. This is part of the process of redemption. Those who say it, that's what they believe. They believe that not just Eretz Yisrael, but even the Medina, right? This is the Dati Lumi philosophy, by and large. That even the state of Israel, right? There's a big chiluk between Eretz Yisrael and Medinas Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a land. Even if you're a Tzuri Karta, even if you're a person who believes that you're not allowed to have a state until the coming of Mashiach. But the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, right? That's a totally different thing. Right, Eretz Yisrael is the land, whether the Arabs rule it, whoever rules it, right? Eretz is the land. The Tzuri Karta, God forbid, are not against the holiness of the land of Israel, but their philosophical position, or maybe we'll give another share to this one day, is that they believe until the Mashiach comes, we're not allowed to have a state. Lehebech is the Dati Leumi position, which is really from Rav Kook, that not only are you allowed to have a state, but the fact that Hashem gave us this ability is part of the messianic process itself. That's the meaning of Aschalta de Geula and Reishis Semichas Geula Seinu. Now some people, even if they recite the prayer, don't want to say that, because they say, listen, we can be grateful to Hashem for Eretz Israel, but we're not going to call it part of the messianic process. Right? So they're kind of in between. So you have three different views here. You have views that say that it is prohibited to have a state of Israel at all. We ought to dismantle it and give it back to the Arabs in the belief, I think highly unrealistic, that the Arabs will love us and respect us and give us access, like they do in Saudi Arabia, right? They'll give us access to be able to serve Hashem as long as, you know, we're not Zionists and the like. That's the Neturei Karta. And then you have the other extreme, the Talmidim of Rav Kook, who say, this is Aschalta de Geula. And then you have a middle of the road, which many B'nai Torah have, in which, Baruch Hashem, we have a place in Eretz Yisrael, but it's Hashem's chesed to us, just like America was Hashem's chesed to us, that we were able to have yeshivas, but we don't look at it as a geula, we don't look at it as a Mashiach, especially since we're still surrounded by enemies that want to destroy us, and the government is not religious, etc., so they don't want to call it a geula yet. It's not a geula yet, it's not Aschalta de Geula. So, I'm not here to be machriya any of these, but I just want to show you something that you could derive from the Or HaChaim. One of the objections, Rav Kook died before there was, Rav Kook was never the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. There was no state of Israel when Rav Kook died. Rav Kook died in the 1930s. The first chief rabbi of the state of Israel was actually a very, very big Talmud Chacham. He was really one of the Gedolim, and that was Rav Yitzchak Herzog. Who had been a rabbi in England and in Ireland, then he became the rav of the Rav Hashi of Eretz Yisrael. His son became president of Israel, Chaim Herzog, and the like. But whatever it is, Rav Kook did live at the time of the Zionist movements and the movement towards statehood, and Rav Kook very much believed that the establishment of a Medina and even all the Zionist activity was part of the messianic process. And people asked Rav Kook, how can you say that? So many Zionists, number one, didn't believe in God. They were anti-Hashkadosh Baruch Hu. Not only were they not religious, but they actually wanted to create a state so there shouldn't be Torah. In other words, let's forget about the gullahs, all those you're doing in Russia and Poland. Let's have a new Jew that's heroic, that's militant, that fights, that has physical strength instead of all this spiritual stuff. And how could Geula be when there's wars and pogroms and enemies that try to massacre you? So one of the answers is based on this Or HaChaim, and that is, if the Jewish people would be totally righteous, Mashiach would come like the flash of a star, instantly, miraculously, and all of the world would simply fall on their knees and worship Hashem and crown Am Yisrael with kavod and glory. And that's called the kochav. But when we're not worthy, and Mashiach is only going to come in the merit of the great, great tzaddikim, Yisrael, but most of us are not worthy, then Mashiach will come in a very painful, gradual way. And that might be a way that involves war. It will be a way that involves death. It will be a way that may even involve non-religious people who don't seem to be acting l'shem Hashem. But that's gufa called the shevet. Shevet, the image of a shevet, which means a stick. Imagine an old man that is hobbling on a cane, trying to get here. But it's very hard for him to get here. So he falls, he trips, he stops to rest. And it doesn't even look like it's part of Mashiach. So all I'm saying is, based on the Or HaChaim, now this doesn't prove that this is Aschalta de Geula, but it creates the possibility that it's Aschalta de Geula. Because the mere fact that there's so many wars is not a stira to Aschalta de Geula, because the Or HaChaim himself says Geula can come in different ways depending on the merits of the generation. Yeah.
Given the slow approach, would it still be miraculous in the end, or it would be
well, it'll be miraculous in the sense that when Mashiach finally reveals himself, there's going to be peace and everyone's going to recognize God. Now that is a great miracle, but it's not going to be a supernatural miracle. It'll be a miracle of people exercising their bechira. Now that is very miraculous indeed, that ISIS is going to say, "Oh, we're sorry for what we did, and we'll put down our weapons and everything else." But it's not going to be a miraculous approach, and that is called the shevet. Now Chazal have a similar idea. They don't express it that way as shevet, but they express it as ani v'rochev al hachamor. Mashiach will be a poor person who will be riding on a donkey. Now allegorically, homiletically, ani can refer to a person that is impoverished in Torah. And chamor, which means donkey, is the same word as chaimrius, which is gashmius. So mamish, look at what the statement is. Mashiach might come through ignorant people who are only concerned with the physical. Remarkable. Meaning, the Zionists who may come, and they were not thinking of Hashem, they were just draining the swamps and doing different things, they might be the vehicle through which Am Yisrael comes here and therefore brings the Mashiach. And people say, how is that Shayach? Why would God do miracles through people who don't observe his commandments? So the Or HaChaim gives us an answer to that. So this could be a very, very prophetic Or HaChaim. Now I'm not telling you to celebrate Yom HaTzimut. I'm not telling you even to say Reishit Smichat Gulateinu. All I'm saying is that the Or HaChaim gives the key that it may very well be that even secular Zionism, as opposed as we are to its beliefs and its hashkafa, obviously we are opposed to it, but it can be a vehicle to bring Am Yisrael back. And of course, Rav Kook generally felt that the Geula will come through means that look improper. If you go back to the Yichus of David HaMelech, right, David comes as a descendant of Rus, and Rus is a descendant of Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab were born through incest of Lot and his daughters. And David HaMelech is descended from Yehuda and Tamar, which also looked like promiscuity. And Rus comes to Boaz in the middle of the night. Meaning, all of the aspects of bringing Mashiach into the world come through a sense of impropriety and aveira. And the Zohar says that is because, you know the expression in English, something can be a wolf in sheep's clothing. Well, the Kabbalah says you sometimes need a sheep in wolf's clothing. What do I mean? That when certain great powers of holiness are coming into the world, the powers of impurity try to destroy it. So sometimes holiness enters into the world looking like something that's not holy, and that allows it to get in under the radar. So Rav Kook saw secular Zionism as an aspect of something that in its root was very holy, but its outer garment was profane and secular and even blasphemous, because that allowed it to come into the world. Otherwise, the kochos of Tuma would have destroyed it. Very, very remarkable type of idea. You can understand this is one of the reasons why Rav Kook was so severely criticized by some other Gedolim, not all Gedolim, because I'm telling you dangerous ideas, and as I'm telling you an idea that sometimes there is good in evil, and that's chas v'shalom could be taken in a very, very dangerous way. But this is what Rav Kook saw, and he felt that even the secular Zionist who says he doesn't believe in God, in his heart of hearts, his connection to Eretz Yisrael is because he does believe in Hashem, even though he's not consciously going to say that. And he made the point that some people come to Eretz Yisrael because they're connected to Hashem, and some people will come to Hashem because they're connected to Eretz Yisrael, and that will bring them back one way or the other. So a lot of this is based, this Or HaChaim is a remarkable, remarkable Or HaChaim, because it is a way of understanding the chesed that Hashem has done, but the way that chesed has come about through means that do not seem to be in accordance with the Torah. Because if we're not zocheh to the kochav miYaakov, we get the shevet, we get the poor person hobbling on a cane, or as the Gemara in Sanhedrin says it, the ani, the ignorant ani, that's rochev, riding on the chamor of chumrius and gashmius and the like. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a good good time.